Well, I want to start out by saying collaboration is out there because if you remember from my introduction, I'm a critical care nurse. And so why am I here? And why am I studying basically a public health issue? And that comes from my background, being an educator in a community college that serves rural women and men, and then working also in critical care in a cardiovascular unit, where the predominant reason that these women were in that facility, in that unit, was related to smoking habits from their rural background and the culture associated with that. So you're working, yes, public health nurse. I'm not a public health nurse by my history, but I'm evolving, let me put it that way. And I've always recognized the need for that collaboration because we would have far less health problems today if more of us in acute care we're also collaborating and working jointly with public health. So, yes, go. Okay, well, I think I need to go back. Your computer. Okay, here we go. Am I going backwards? Right there. First, I would like to recognize and thank Dr. Kneipp, who's in our audience today. She is my mentor at UNC and has been very influential in guiding this review and the process as I've gone forward with this. I have no disclosures. Well, I'm having real trouble with this. There we go. And again, my objective today is to describe really the current literature on smoking and how really it impacts future research needs in the area of public health nursing related to rural health. Now, the reality, if I go back to this slide here, you see this beautiful picture of a rural countryside. And many people seem to think that's what rural communities look like. But in actuality, the pictures that we see, as many of you know, in rural areas is much different. So, barriers. First of all, I'd like to point out that one of the strongest, the most intense barriers that I have found in doing research on rural health is just access to data. Recently, at UNC, I attended a census conference for 2 days just trying to find out why can't I find more specifics on smoking in this population of low-income women. Well, first of all, there's, I think, 15 different definitions of rural versus urban that's used in federal programs. Three of our federal agencies use different definitions of rural. So when you start defining what you're researching, it becomes very, very difficult. They're working on basically consolidating those definitions, but that is a barrier that we need to look at. Also, when you do get into the census data and some of the BRFSS data and health data that's out there, access to the microdata is very limited. That really goes back to the confidentiality issues. When you start looking at the blocks in the census data, you have to be, they are very careful about confidentiality. To get really into the depths of the data that I really would like to see, I have been told I would need to get federal clearance. So that may be something down the road we'll look at doing, but it's difficult. And then once you get into the data that is there, the sample limitations are also a barrier. It's small. You're dealing with small numbers many times that you can access easily. So first, there's a barrier just to even finding, just stepping into the research and getting started when you're trying to make an argument for why we need to focus on this group of women. I couldn't put it together, but I did find where the American Lung Association had done this wonderful chart in one of their publications that actually compared rural versus urban smoking. And this is, again, we're dealing with 10-year census data So this is 2010. I'm sure it's changed. So you can see the difference just between the rural populations and urban populations in age and gender here. 90% of our land mass in this country is rural, and that's, again, consolidating the definitions. And approximately 16% of our population lives in rural areas. So if you start looking at some of the health problems, it can be quite overwhelming that this group in and of itself can display. Rural populations, they tend to smoke more. They begin smoking at an earlier age. So the health problems and disparities that we're seeing in this population are going to be exacerbated if you take that closer look. So what I decided to do is just go forward with this systematic review and say, okay, well, what's out there in the literature? So I'm going to go just very briefly through how I approach the research, trying to look at different key terms and databases. I limited the search to 1997 to 2012, basically because there is a lot of information on smoking. Smoking, as all of you know, has been an area of concern for many, many years. But I wanted the more recent, more applicable data that was out there. So this is just kind of a flow chart of my findings. And I'm going to skip quickly down to the results. And conceptually, what I found as I looked closer at the details within these reports, the qualitative studies, there were really only two qualitative studies that I could find in that period of time that focused on this population. Now, please remember, this isn't a general search. It's very specific to rural, poor rural women or low-income rural women. The studies focused on social support, social networks, something we'll speak more of here. And again, going back to social networks can either be facilitators to cessation or they can be barriers. There was concern in the literature that perhaps these were more barriers in this culture. And also significant was that the findings pointed to the need for personal social networks to be approached. So many of the interventions, when we get down to RCTs, were dealing with telephone interventions, internet interventions. We sent public health people in. We sent other community people in to help with the interventions, and these did not show long-term effective change. But what the people wanted, what the women voiced, was they wanted family, friends, and local peer support that could really help them with their decision to quit. Lots of descriptive studies. Again, we know what we know. It's out there. I'm not going to go back and reiterate the relationship to low income, poverty, education, or low education. Poverty is worse. It is more significant and higher in rural populations, which then further impacts the smoking. There was only really one comparative study. And this basically showed that there was much less emphasis on teaching about opportunities for smoking cessation and programs for cessation in rural communities. And again, only five RCTs that base their interventions on telephone, internet types of interventions. So just to kind of summarize, taking those concepts that were found in the studies and putting them together, the points I'd like to bring out are that the higher smoking rates and relapse in rural women with low income and less education are going back to the geography and the location of what we're studying here. If you go back to their geographic disparities, we need to look more at that in our studies. The support systems that these women wanted, they wanted the personal types of support systems. And there was evidence, there was one study, one intervention study, possibly one of the older studies that involved, it was in Virginia, of African-American churches and implementing some interventions with the African-American members, hoping that the intervention would be more successful than the non-intervention. What they did find is that even though the intervention wasn't successful, those people that really claimed to be members of a church did better. It wasn't at a real significant level, but they felt like that was significant in their findings. It was also interesting that this study pointed to the community itself did not recognize smoking as a health problem. Only due to the connection of funding with doing the intervention in the community did they recognize that smoking was even a health problem. So again, that is gives us a little bit of insight into the culture and the significance of smoking. And again, smoking assessment and intervention is less emphasized in rural health settings. The practitioners are not bringing it up as often as they should. So for a framework of this study and where I tend to go with this, I go back to some basic social theorists, all the way back to Mead that conceptualized the interaction, the self-interaction that goes on, to Bloomer and Goffman, where meanings associated with our behaviors change. So what we need to do basically is look at forward from that and where we go with our interventions. There's social network theory. You know, historically that started back with House. He did a lot of studies on how social support helps and is very conducive to better health. Bergman and Glass took it a little bit further and made the connection between social support and social networks. And then Fowler, Smith, and Christakis are three of the more recent that have actually done network analysis. And they have some really interesting work. Social capital, marginalization, and stigma. You know, we're really good at going out and telling people what they should do and how they would be better and this their life would be a higher quality if they did stop smoking. But we are finding that by marginalizing and creating a stigma around smoking, it's actually causing defiant behavior. That the people that smoke, especially disadvantaged people, it creates a power imbalance where the disadvantaged person that is continuing to smoke feels that they are not going to listen. They want to be empowered and maintain their own sense of being. So, where do we need to go? There's discrepancies. Our interventions so far seem to be focused at outside or peripheral people coming in, peripheral resources coming in, and trying to provide these opportunities to change. But what the women are telling us is they really are looking for internal, inside support. And we also need to step back and remember that there are positive and negative aspects to social networks. It's a rural area. There's not a lot of opportunity for changing your social network, changing your support system. So if they step outside, if everyone around them, if all the social networks that they are involved with have heavy smoking, and the more networks they're involved with that are smokers, it tends to reinforce that behavior. You start pulling them out of their social networks. They don't belong. They're somewhat out there trying to find new networks. So the groups, they tend to support each other. What you will find is that when women stop smoking, they go back and their friends are going, "What's wrong with you? Come on, you need to go outside." we're going to go have a smoke. So we need to look more into how we can provide other types of networks. And again, I've already spoken to the marginalization, stigmatization, and the reciprocal relationship between the powers of stigmatization. The cost of social capital, you start taking away their social networks, their social support, there's more isolation. Because smoking is a cultural norm in this group of women. So where do we need to really focus? I think in terms of our time, where we need to go, we need to look more at participatory research. What does it mean to be a smoker? Look more at what these women want. What is the culture of smoking in their world? And make decisions about interventions based on that information. To consider marginalization, stigmatization, stereotyping. My study will move forward doing a qualitative approach using ethnographic methods, going out using some photo voice, interviews, and hope to find what they want, what smoking means to them, and how that can be changed. And again, bring it back to the public health arena, I guess projecting forward, impact smoking rates and decrease our disease and disparities in this population. Thank you.